Ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to the Musician's Mentor Podcast. I'm your host, Travis Mark, and today I have the privilege of speaking with Texas's own Nick J. Nick is a multi-instrumentalist producer. He owns Century Recordings and is a touring bass player slash session bass player for bands like Heathens, Seth James, Western Union Man. He's also played with Ed Kowalczyk from Live, and he currently plays keys for the band Live. So, real privilege to talk to such a talented and humble guy. We get into a few things away from music, which I'm always a big fan of because I like to sort of get into the mindsets of people, or at least talk about mindsets. Obviously, getting into a mindset is a whole different ballgame. If you're enjoying these episodes, please head to your streaming preference and leave us a rating or review. But as usual, I'm going to jump straight into it. Ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only, Mr. Nick J.
Damn, dude, you're fucking punctual.
I try, man. I try. How's it going?
It's good, dude. Just doing some cleaning and cooking some breakfast.
Nice. What you cooking? Anything good?
Man, I just got off of a 10-day detox, like gut detox. And so I'm really just trying to continue the healthy eating. And so I've got some chicken sausage, some onions, jalapenos and bell peppers and spinach and a couple eggs. I'll make me a little omelet.
Sounds delicious, man.
Yeah, dude.
Well, so, I mean, we'll get into this, but you're on the road quite a lot. And, you know, something I've spoken to everyone I've spoken to so far. So at this point, it's like trying to eat healthy while you're on the road is not so easy, especially in certain cities. They still quite, I don't want to say far behind, but still quite not as accommodating for the healthy eaters of the world.
you'd be surprised, actually. Like, you know, this band that I'm in now is really healthy. I mean, nobody's like a vegan or anything, but like, we all are very conscious about what we put in our bodies. And that's not to say that we don't have fun and like eat, you know, like shit occasionally, but, we don't do fast food. You know, we all make enough money that we can spend $10 or $15 on a meal and not, you know, feel really bad about it kind of thing.
Yeah.
And, so, I mean, honestly, like on our last, like, I think it was like an 18-day run or 20-day run, I lost 10 pounds.
Wow, good for you, dude.
So, yeah, it's really just, people can blame the road. It is, don't get me wrong, it is harder. Because, like, I was doing this detox, and it's like I'm not supposed to have like butter or certain things, and it's like some of the restaurants we went to, like I just had no choice.
Oh yeah,
you know, it's like they cook in butter, and they're not going to like cook something special just in olive oil because some fat dude wants, you know what I mean? So,
oh man, well, cool. I tell you what, let's back it up a little. Firstly, thanks for taking the time, dude. I can't tell you how much I appreciate it. And secondly, just so you kind of know where we're headed or what we're trying to do, the whole idea here is to try and talk to working musicians about, you know, their experiences, both good and bad, life on the road, how to get gigs, how to keep gigs. So we're not necessarily going to go into the typical kind of podcast or music podcast format where we're going to talk about, man, what's your favorite scale to practice and what's your favorite piece of gear? And, oh, if you were on a desert island, what piece of gear couldn't you live without? Because, you know, if you're on a desert island, you probably want to be worrying about food more than gear. But you know, I don't know. I digress. You know, I've prepped a couple things, but we'll basically just see where the conversation goes. And, you know, where it goes, it goes. I don't edit anything, unless, of course, we get some, like, really random noises in the background or something. Like the one I did a couple days ago. Oh, man, my landscaper decided to come as I started the damn interview. And And, and man, it sounded like damn fighter jets. It doesn't matter how much isolation I've got in the room. It's like he was right outside this room, and I was like, oh, dude, no. But, you know, away from that, we just go for it, and we kind of just have a chat. So with that being said, what I've done with everybody, Nick, is I know it's a little, like, weird, but could I ask that maybe just for the people who are going to be listening to this, could you just give us a brief introduction, you know, where you're from, what you've done, how you got into music, and where you currently are, just so they kind of know where your headspace is and where you're coming from, please.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. My name is Nick Jay. I'm originally from a little town outside of Oklahoma City called Mustang, or Yukon. It's kind of like there's two cities that rival each other, but my mom, like, lives right in between them, and we actually... My mom's address actually has like three different cities involved in it. So it's kind of funny. Anyway, I got my start in music at a really young age, started playing piano when I was 3 or 4. And my dad had a Southern gospel group growing up, or not growing up, but before I was born in the 70s, he had a Southern gospel group. And so I kind of always had some sense of music in me. Just kind of fell in love with piano at a young age. Middle school, I picked up trombone and ended up being like an all-state trombonist. Played in the jazz bands, the marching bands, the concert bands. And then in high school, I found out that wasn't very cool. So I joined choir where all the cheerleaders were and learned how to sing a little bit better. And then graduated high school. I grew up in church. So I ended up playing with some Christian bands right out of high school, touring the country. And then since then, it's just been like a building block, you know, it's over the last, Jesus, almost, I guess, 21 years now. It's just been like, all right, what can we get to the next step? I picked up bass when I was 11, fell in love with it, found that I was pretty naturally good at it, and just kind of exploited that and just started getting better and better trying to get better and better and spending hours and hours and hours a day practicing and honing and, you know, all the fun stuff. Since then, played with a band called Jonathan Tyler and the Northern Lights for the first 5 years of that band. They're still going, but I stepped out in 2011. Since then, I've played with Ed Kowalczyk from Live and with my friend Zach. And that's taken me all over the world, where I've got to do some really incredible things with, like, some of the biggest bands I've ever even heard of. You know, we've got to play with the Rolling Stones. Got to watch Soundgarden from side stage before Chris Cornell passed away. Got to watch Black Sabbath from side stage. Just little things that, you know, they're not crazy, like, cool, but a lot of people just don't get to experience. So I feel pretty blessed about that.
No, they're crazy cool. They're crazy cool. And it's like, I always look at things like that as, you know, I'm big into, like, sort of trying to think about certain things in like a reward kind of fashion, you know? So like if you've put time in and you've spent that many years trying to hone your skills as a musician and you get that opportunity, man, you've got to just bask in its glory, because that's just life-changing stuff, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I'm not trying to detract from it. It was obviously like a holy shit moment in my life. Can we cuss on the podcast? Is that all right?
Oh, yeah, you can say whatever the fuck you want.
All right, great. I curse a lot, so.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, man. So, you know, did the Stones thing. That was, like, in 2014. And then since then, you know, I'm just playing with people that I enjoy playing with. And I, you know, I do have to play with people that can pay enough, just because this is my job. And, you know, people can say that they do it for the passion and the love of music all they want, but at the end of the day, you still got to pay your fucking bills. So I do this to make money. I am a for-profit musician. And yeah, man, it's just been a riot, man. It's been 21 years of just hustling and grinding, and, you know, years where I literally made $3,000 or $4,000 for the year. So my bills were paid. And, you know, years where I've made $120,000. So it's like, there's like this, I don't know, I guess just to say, like, if you really want to do this, just keep going. you know, because eventually it took me 16 years to have like a decent salary for playing music.
Yeah. Yeah. Longevity. You know, yeah. I think it's again, it's something that's come up with a few of the guys that I've spoken to already, but it's like, you know, I think there's some really cool, funny memes about it now, but I think for years before social media was such a thing, I think the general perception was, oh yeah, you're a musician. So that basically means that you don't work and you sleep all day. And when you do work, you drink or indulge in other vices when you do, because what a fun job. This isn't a real job. When are you going to get a real job? I mean, the amount of times I've had that question asked to me, and it's like, it's really quite crazy, you know, because something that, again, that I'm trying to hopefully achieve with this, and where this goes, I don't really know. I mean, I've done podcasts before, but it was very... you know, it was genre driven, instrumentation driven, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But again, my goal here is to try and get up and coming musicians. And I use that term very loosely because I don't mean to imply like young musicians in terms of age. I mean to imply like guys who've decided like, you know, oh, it's time to do this full time or try and do it full time or give it a go, et cetera, et cetera. I'm trying to let them know that it's a struggle and it's hard because essentially, if you're doing it correctly, you're self-employed, but you can make money. So I agree with you. You know, I've gone through a couple of tough years myself, but, you know, once you learn how to manage money and use the tax breaks as a musician, you know, with the gear and all those kinds of things, the mileage and all that kind of stuff. It's like, you can live comfortably if you're willing to work. It's no different to any other job, you know?
Right. Yeah. Just like any job. I mean, you don't start out at the huge corporate company at $150,000 a year. You start out in the mailroom at like $25,000 or $30,000.
Yeah.
And then you keep growing in skill. You keep learning about the company. You keep learning about the business itself. And usually if you're career driven and it's what you really want to do, you end up finding that position with another company or the same company that takes you where you really want to go. And that takes time.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, yeah. everybody wants everything now. And it's like, man, before I could drive, I started playing bass at 11 years old. Before I could drive, I would literally spend 3 or 4 hours a day playing, like learning bass, like sitting on the radio, like practicing the worship music, practicing to the radio, practicing to CDs, whatever it was. And just like any job, man, you got to get your skills developed before you can really reap the benefits. And just like with any other job, some people are naturally better at it than you are going to be.
Yeah.
Just how it is.
Yeah. 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 Completely. So, I mean, in addition to your bass playing and your music instrumentation knowledge, you also do a lot of production, right?
I do.
We didn't even really get into that with your intro stuff, but I know that you've got Century Recordings.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us a little bit about how you started that, and sort of a sort of more long-winded question attached to that. How do you manage to find a balance between, let's say, gig life and production life?
All right, so I don't really know what got me into production. I feel like I've just kind of always been interested in how things work, and that's not just music, but that's just in life. Like, I'm a very inquisitive, very technology-driven person. And so when I really started learning music and listening to music, I was trying to figure out like why they went to that chord and where they went to that chord and how. And that just kind of all prompted, you know, I want to do this. And so even as a kid, my best friend and I growing up, but especially in music, he actually passed away, unfortunately, in 2007.
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah, it was a crazy freak accident. We learned music together, and we'd go up to our church, and we had a key to our youth building. We went to a pretty large church, and we had been there our whole lives, so we were really trusted, you know, people and stuff. But we would just go up there and record on this little Roland 8-track digital recorder, and just try and figure it out, you know, like, hey, what does this sound like? What if we do this here? What if we do this here? And that just kind of snowballed, to be honest. You know, I started doing that when I was probably 14 or 15 years old.
Wow.
And, you know, by the time I was 18, I had a Motu 828 interface that I could connect to my little Hewlett Packard PC. And I was able to kind of understand what tracking and mixing were. I didn't really yet, but, you know, I downloaded a cracked version of Nuendo and a bunch of cracked plugins and just started learning. I didn't know shit.
Yeah.
So now fast forward, and I've got a vintage Neve console and a bunch of really rare and nice outboard gear and nice microphones, and still learning, just trying to figure out how to put it all together, just with better gear this time, better gear now.
Yeah.
So what was the second, what was the long-winded part of that question? Sorry.
Just basically, how do you balance the gig sort of part of your musical career and the production side of your musical career?
Honestly, like, if I don't, I get bored. I love music. I love everything that I do. But if I stay in one place for too long, I start to not lose interest, but I'm ready for the next step or the next part of it. And so for me, I also mix live. I mix bands live. I do corporate gigs just to keep money coming in. For me, doing the different array of ideas keeps it fresh for me. It keeps it moving. And it also teaches me. So if I'm out with a live band and I hear a band that I really like that we tour with, or maybe we have a show where, you know, Trevor, our organ player, does something I've never even thought about doing before, it's inspirational to me as a producer. It's like, oh shit, you know, I can do something like that in that song that we just started recording.
Yeah.
So I think it's a huge important part of the balance, or a part of music, is not just pigeonholing yourself in one area, because that's how you get burnt out. Because as soon as that doesn't go exactly like you thought it would, then it's like, well, shit, I guess I wasn't supposed to do this.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. And let's kind of jump on that there as well, like the burnt out part. So I, as I'm sure you have, I know a lot of musicians who, they seem to come and go, you know, they have real success, and before you know it, a few years later, they're not even doing the music thing. So I don't really know what causes that. I mean, obviously everybody's wired a little bit differently, and people think differently and handle things differently, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But are you, let me think how to question this correctly. Basically, when I'm in relationships, okay, I've always got a little bit of flack about the fact that I work too much. You know, I'm a workaholic, and even on the days off, I'm trying to work on something musically. Now, I quite enjoy that. I obviously need to find a bit of a better balance for myself personally. But are you the type of person that when you aren't booked in the studio or aren't booked sort of on the road, are you doing things musically related, or are you kind of just stepping away from music completely?
I'd say a little bit of both. You know, like if I come off like even just a 3 or 4 day run, I have been known to like just come home and just completely get away from music for a day. Like yesterday, I got home from, it's kind of a little mini vacation. I went to surprise my mom for her birthday, but I came home and like yesterday, I didn't have any motivation and any energy. And and with the way that my mind works, like I try not to force that in music, because then I feel like you can hear it.
Oh yeah.
And so I rested yesterday. You know, I cleaned my house. I watched some TV. I played a few video games. I just took some time away from music, away from my normal everyday to day, and just relaxed. And I think that's super important too, is to disconnect just for a little bit. Yeah. You know. If I come home from a 2 or 3 week tour, I might chill for 2 or 3 days and just completely just get not even listen to music. There are days I don't even turn my radio on in my car, or I just put podcasts on, or I love the Netflix channel on Sirius. Those kinds of things.
I follow you on Instagram, so I see what you're up to, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, I'm also, I'm fortunate in that I gig pretty much every night, and it's funny because I find that I listen far more to other sources of media than music as well, mostly because, you know, after a gig, I don't know if it's because I kind of want to try and maybe rest my ears a bit or what, but I just, while I do something with music pretty much every day, I don't want to listen to music on my way home from gigs and things like that. I try and like just decompress a little, you know? Yeah. So podcasts and stuff are great, you know? I mean, man, imagine if podcasts were out 20 years ago. Like, oh, it'd just be amazing. What even YouTube, you know? I know that a lot of musicians kind of bitch and moan about the internet and streaming and social media and YouTube and all this kind of thing, but it's like, man, like, imagine the educational advances you could have had had things like YouTube been around. Because, you know, to have a career as long as someone like you've had your career, you've had to be diligent. And like you say, you know, I mean, you picked up the bass at like 11 and you practiced. It's like there's a certain amount of self-discipline that has to go with that.
Mm-hmm.
Where I don't know if maybe the social media aspect of it has become distracting for people, but I sometimes look at that and I just think back to when I was younger. And man, just to get like an educational like VHS tape was like, oh man, you know, they were expensive, and when you did get one, you'd basically watch that thing until the actual tape stretched out. So it's like now that you can just like get everything at the touch of a button, I mean, it's good in that regard. I know it's bad in many others, but like I sometimes really wonder for myself personally how that might have changed things for me. Would it have been a complete distraction, or would it have been just a godsend? Because just what an opportunity to just use that, you know?
Yeah, but at the same time, what also came with the YouTube and everything was the ease of recording, so where you didn't have to actually know anything about music. And so there's that balance that's like, it's definitely been lost, but would that balance have been available if, you know, like if YouTube came out before the technology to do everything at home or on a MacBook Pro came out beforehand, you know, like would we be as lazy in music now because of YouTube, or is it just the ease of being able to create? You know, I guess what I'm saying is like, is YouTube the reason that we have so many talented artists, and also some artists that maybe should look at some other options for, you know, gigs or for careers? And is YouTube the reason that we are lazy as a music community now? Or is it the fact that everything is easily accessible, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, the one thing I will say that I've noticed, and again, I think we're fairly similar in age, and so you've probably noticed it yourself, but the one thing I will say is, like, if you think about, like, sort of music clinics, like where you would used to have to pay for a ticket and go watch a guy at a music store, for example, I don't see those getting as attended as they used to. And I think, you know, live concerts are probably the same, not necessarily for like the big stadium kind of selling out kind of artists, but I think that comes with the fact that, well, firstly, you can just pull up all that information on your phone. So why go sit with a bunch of dudes in a room and pay, you know, I think this is how people think. I'm not saying I do.
Sure.
But pay to go watch some guy talk about how he plays modes, you know, in triplets, in sequences of thirds versus, you know, I can slow that down on YouTube and really get to grasps with it. Plus, I don't need the confidence of having to put up my hand and ask a question if I didn't get it, you know? I can just do that. But I don't know, man. I think it has to be embraced. I mean, it's definitely not going to go away, all that kind of stuff.
Right.
But I just, there are elements that, you know, as to your kind of last comment, it's like there are definitely elements that have changed. You know, I mean, like, I've definitely seen guys who, they've got a rocking album and you can stream it and you can listen to it and you go, wow, that's really quite good. And then I've gone to watch them live and I've thought, wow, I wonder if these guys like ever spend time actually learning their instruments, because this doesn't sound like the album at all. In fact, you know, I saw a post on Butch Walker's Instagram story a
couple
days ago. Oh, he's fantastic.
Yeah.
And I don't know who he had reposted it from, but it basically said, like, are you honestly telling me that we're now at a point in music where we're asking musicians and artists and writers and producers to rather learn and take the time to learn algorithms and sort of the coding side of how numbers work to attract sort of people to your page so you can be an influencer versus taking the time to learn your craft? And I just thought that was like, that's pretty spot on to where it seems to be, you know?
Yeah, I think people are using music. I think, okay, this is going to get really deep and way kind of away from music for a second.
That's totally cool.
But I think that people are using music as therapy, like literal therapy. I think that there's a lot of trauma in today's world. And I think that a lot of people either don't know how or are too afraid to face and deal with that trauma. And it feels like it comes out in different ways. You know, we have like the TikTokers that, like, a pretty girl who has like maybe daddy issues can just stand there in a bikini and get 50,000 likes.
Yeah.
Whereas like there's a girl named, I was just listening to her when you called, how do you say this name? As a girl like Zenadelphia, who, you know, a lot of people haven't heard of, who is like ridiculous voice, this ridiculous talent naturally. And maybe she's not as pretty as the Kardashians or something. You know, it's like we've put our focus on so much surface level things. And so then we use creativity to use as therapy instead of as creativity.
Yeah. It's quite sad, actually.
It's tough to watch as somebody who has grown up and only done music. I mean, I've had jobs, obviously, just to keep money coming in when music was slow. But as a career, as a lifelong career, it's really hard to watch. You know, imagine kids using like being an oil CEO as therapy. Like, you just don't see that.
Yeah. Do you ever watch South Park?
That's one of my favorite shows. I can't stop watching it.
Did you ever see that that episode? And this is like going back a few years now, when Guitar Hero kind of was like becoming a thing, and you know, all the kids keep getting together for these like Guitar Hero parties, and they're like, you know, can't believe how good they are at Guitar Hero. And I think it was Stan's dad. He goes up into the attic and he brings down like a Gibson Les Paul and some massive Marshall stack, and he plugs it in front of all the kids and he does this ripping solo. I mean, it's just incredible. And all the kids kind of like stop and look at him, and he finishes and he's covered in sweat and they go, "That was lame." And oh man, I think about it all the time because it's like, it's quite funny. A few years back, when Guitar Hero was quite big, the band that I was in at the time, we got hired to go play at the Guitar Hero World Championship contest final. I don't know what it was. And we were a real band playing at this event. We were like one of, say, maybe three or four bands playing. But man, I was watching some of these dudes, and I'm talking sort of teenagers up to about 30. So like anything from around 14, 15 up to about 30. And these people from all over the world, and they just shredding on Guitar Hero. Like, wow. Just like, my jaw was dropping because I couldn't believe the skill required. But again, to kind of go back to what we sort of talking about, I also kept thinking, this is quite incredible, but imagine if these people could have spent this amount of time learning actual guitar.
Right.
Like, we would have some real guitar heroes, you know.
Right.
And that's not to say we don't have guitar heroes, but it is also funny that when you think of like that term guitar hero, it's the same names that have been coming up now for, wow, going on 40 years, man. So it's like, it's really interesting that, again, if you consider what we're talking about, the accessibility of just how easy it is to learn this stuff now. We're just not getting these people. So again, I don't know if it's because we're kind of distracted by the surface level stuff, or if it's just a mindset thing, or I don't really know. It'd be interesting if we could kind of like get a DeLorean and go into the future and see just where music's gonna go, because sometimes I worry, I'm not gonna lie.
Right? Yeah, between like where hip hop has gone and, or I guess rap, hip hop is still pretty pure, but where rap has gone and like where all the different electronic divisions now that are like literally just algorithms, you know, it's like at some point, like we're gonna lose all musicality.
Yeah.
We've already had people just making noises as rap, you know, rap. It's like, yeah. It's like, what the fuck are you talking about?
And always in a triplet.
Like, I love hip hop. Like, I'm a huge J Dilla, J Electronica, Madlib, like underground, like Old Common, you know, like back when these guys were just in Chicago and Detroit and New York were just grinding. And man, those were the days of hip hop. And now it's just like, again, it's just gotten lazy.
Yeah. And lyrically, it used to mean something, you know, it was supposed to be a fight the power kind of music. And now it's like, well, I can't usually even hear what they say. And again, maybe we're just getting old, you know, maybe that's just what happens. You know, we don't get it, perhaps. I don't know. But I do know that hip hop has definitely become formulated, just like pop music was and still is. You know, there's a formula. You can copy the rhythms, you can copy the tempos, you can copy the chord progressions, you can copy everything about it. And I just don't know how anyone sticks out, you know? Like, will we ever have another Tupac or Eminem? I'm not sure. I mean, have you heard that kid Token? I think he's from Boston.
No, I haven't heard of him.
Man, he's phenomenal. Why he's not breaking through, and again, I use that lightly because, I mean, he's got millions of streams, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But, I mean, this kid's just phenomenal, dude. I believe that Mark Wahlberg is behind him financially as, like, kind of an angel investor. But, I mean, I have no way of proving any of that. This is just what I've heard.
Sure.
But, like, a kid like this, he's talking about, like, some real issues, you know? But I think it's almost just too real because people want to hear the prrp thing, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know, maybe he needs to dumb it down. But like, again, that's quite sad because he's really got something, man. Like, so, hey, if anyone's listening to this, go check out Token. The guy's fucking phenomenal, you know?
I'm going to add it on my phone right now. Just like T-O-K-E-N?
Yeah, T-O-K-E-N.
Not like Tolkien from South Park?
No, unfortunately not. So hey man, let's talk about gigging. Like, how old were you when you started getting into like serious gigging? How did you go about getting sort of into gigging? And now that you have been doing this for a few years and obviously, you know, you're still gigging and you're on the road and you play with a bunch of different guys, what advice could you give people about once you have a gig, how do you keep that gig?
Ooh. All right. So the first question was, how old was I when I first started gigging?
And how did you get into it?
That's kind of a hard question because, like, growing up in church, those were gigs to me. You know, it's like I played trombone in the main sanctuary, and then in the youth band, I kind of just played whatever they needed, like guitar or trombone or piano or bass, or, and just kind of a big part of it. So like, as far as performing, I kind of just grew up performing, like, in church mainly. I would do special songs for the whole congregation. Just kind of always loved hamming it up. So, but it's, as far as like actual gigs, I joined a band when I was like 16, probably 15 or 16. The guys were a little bit older. They were like in their early 20s. And that was probably my first like actual gig. And I was like a utility guy. I played keyboards and guitar and sang a little bit of backgrounds. But then when I graduated high school, there was this Christian band that did like a lot of youth camps and conventions and such, that the bass player married my pastor's daughter. And so there was this connection, because like my dad and our pastor were like best friends for 40 years. And they ended up asking me to come out for the summer with them and play in the youth camps and such. And so I did. And like, I honestly wasn't even a great bass player at that point. Not even really a good bass player, to be honest with you. But they gave me a chance. And shortly after that, I got called by a band from Missouri to come out there and like be on salary. And like my first gig with them was in Hershey Arena for 10,000 youth. And that was pretty cool. Still just doing worship music and church camps and stuff, but you know, it was fun. So I did that band for like 8 or 9 months. And like, there were just some internal things that I didn't agree with as far as like the way I was treated. But I also was kind of like, it's kind of like the prodigy of my hometown. So like, you know, I was always praised, and you get out in the real world and it's like, hey man, here's what it's really like. And so I had a lot of learning to do is what I'm really trying to say.
All right. Let me hijack your answer here.
Okay.
So what do you think was the hardest lesson you had to learn as a young gigging musician?
Oh, let me think about that for a second. I think maintaining the health is the hardest part. Because, I mean, well, I don't know.
Yeah, it's a bit of a loaded question. I apologize.
No, it's totally...
You inspired me as you were saying that. I was like, ah, oh, here's a good one.
Oh, yeah, I love challenging stuff, and I love getting deep, so that's not a problem. Man. I think it's just a collection of everything that you do. I mean, there's a lot to manage mentally. And as you keep getting more and more gigs and learning more and more songs, like, it gets even more and more important to understand your role in the band, understand that you're a part of a collective, and understand that it's going to be constant growth for everybody. Because it's easy to get really good and then just sit there and be like, well, I'm already good. You know, and the other parts too, you know, that was the biggest part of my journey was my mind. You know, I grew up an only child, so I kind of grew up selfish. And I struggled with not team playing, but like, I just wanted people to know what I was doing too. And so like, I didn't understand taste. And so it took a long time to learn tone and a long time to learn taste, especially growing up with church music. So I think just that collective of like all the mental stuff that you have to go through to be a musician. It's not just playing music. There's so much more than the music. The music is probably like what, 30% of it.
Yeah.
So. I mean, at least once you started professionally, like when you're learning, it's, you know, it's 90 or 100% of it. But whenever you actually get on the road and you actually start gigging, there are so many other things that just, if you have your music down, like you should, it shouldn't be your focus at that point. There's a lot of business decisions and a lot of things to do correctly on the road so that you can tour well and that you can tour harmoniously.
Yeah,
I'm actually,
makes total sense.
I'm working on a book, like very slowly working on a book it's called the Pocketbook Guide to Touring.
Oh, cool.
It's going to be like 90 or 95 pages that can literally fit in your back pocket and or on the phone. And it's just going to be like, hey, here's a collection of stories and ideas from me and a bunch of other people as we've toured for 20, 30 years.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's just a few things to like, hey, if you do this, it's going to be easier.
Yeah.
And
again, you know, sorry, go for it. I'll go after you.
Oh, no, I was just going to say just some funny stories and stuff from on the roads and you know, just what it's really, what it's truly like. Cause you know, it's not like the Motley Crue's and the 80s hair metal anymore. It's not like that anymore.
Yeah. That's a great book. Have you, you've read that book, The Dirt?
I watched the movie.
Yeah, they leave a lot of stuff out the movie. I'll send you the book. It's really worth reading. Okay, so let's get back to it. So what about, like, so you've been gigging for a while and, you know, you realize that this is kind of what you're going to do and stuff. And how do you go about, once you're in a position that you enjoy, you're working with some guys you like or maybe you at least can tolerate and you know it's a good band, how do you personally go about keeping that gig? And what advice could you give people about sort of just, you know, I suppose you've kind of covered a little bit about it when you were talking about the, you know, it's a being a sum of its parts and a band's a collective, et cetera, et cetera. But what kind of tips could you give people about just once you're gigging, trying to keep that gig or trying to keep your place within that band in a comfortable position, shall we say?
Oh man, this is a really tough answer for me, just because I've been through all sides of this. You know, I've been to the parts where I wasn't supposed to be in that band. And now, as somebody who has like done a lot of mental work to become whole and like been able to look back over my life to when I wasn't, this is a pretty deep question. So being able to keep the gig, it really is just knowing how to be a part of something and not wanting to be the whole part of it. It's understanding, like, that's really it. It's being part of a whole. If you're a cog in the wheel, then you're in the wrong machine.
Yeah.
There's
that's a great way to look at it, actually.
Yeah.
You know, I don't even think you have to complicate it any further than that. It's pretty perfect, you know. Basically, learn to be a team player, you know.
Right, and just because, like, you and your friends are really good buddies and, like, you love playing music together, it doesn't mean you're the right band.
Yeah.
I tried that for a long time, and I ended up heartbroken. Like, I made myself a victim, and I went through some really hard times on my own accord. But I don't know. I guess I was supposed to be there for that season. But, you know, harmony is like the biggest key. Being easy to tour with is another thing. Like being chill, being super easy to get along with. Not being super picky and super bougie and, you know, like, well, I need this. And it's like, well, then go somewhere else. That's not to say that you can't express what you'd like out of the whole situation, but I don't know. There's so much to it, man. That's a really, really, really hard question to answer.
Yeah, and again, you know, I think it's one of those things that if you're open to it, you can learn it along the way. Mm-hmm. But to go back to some of the sort of points that you've mentioned, if you're in a headspace that makes it all about you and you're constantly thinking, oh, you know, I want to do this and I need that, like you've sort of said, you're not really going to learn anything. All you're going to learn is the hard way.
Yeah.
And so, you know, to go back to your book, that'd be brilliant because, again, you know, when I started doing this, as I'm sure with you, you got the advantage of talking to some older guys every now and then. But for the most part, there was no book that taught you how to be on the road.
Mm-mm.
You know, there were always books about, you know, oh, here's a contact and, you know, here's a six degree from separation. So if you know this guy, you'll know that guy and then you can get this gig. Well, yeah, okay, within reason, but there was never, at least not to my knowledge, there was never a, hey man, did you know that if you make moves on your guitarist's girlfriend, you're probably going to get fired from the band?
Or know? Beat up or like, both.
Yeah, or beat up, or, you know, I mean, again, I'm talking slightly out of turn here because I don't want to make this about me, but
no.
I find what I found, one of the things that I found really hard to sort of come to terms with early on. I mean, now I'm older and I'm hopefully a little bit wiser, but I was really ignorant as a kid playing music. You know, I was young and I was gigging, and I wasn't actually allowed in the clubs that I was playing at. So my parents would thankfully drive me to the venue, and I'd be able to sit outside. And when it was time to play, I was allowed to go inside, and then I had to come back outside and wait for the band to kind of be finished at the end of the night so I could get my money, kind of thing, if we were even getting paid. But the part that I found really hard to digest was, you know, I was playing with older guys, and unfortunately some of those guys had some vices, which I wasn't smartened up to, and certain behaviors would change, and I couldn't figure out why. And I was just like this kid who wanted to play music, and I was like, oh wow, he's being a bit moody today. That's weird. I wonder what's going on. And, you know, eventually you get a bit older and you pay a bit more attention, and maybe it's not even an age thing. Maybe it's just a perception thing. But I started to see certain things around me, and I started putting two and two together and went, oh, okay, it wasn't actually something I did that time. Maybe the previous time it was, but this particular time, it's because the guy's, you know, unfortunately gone and done some stuff he shouldn't have done and altered his chemicals. So I was really ignorant to that, you know. And, you know, I'm fortunate now in regards to a lot of the guys I work with now, that they're not like that. But dude, that was really taxing on me mentally, because when you've got guys just throwing mood swings left, right, and center, and you don't know why, especially because you're still a very impressionable child in essence.
Mm-hmm.
You think you're not, but I found that really quite like mind blowing, you know?
Absolutely. So, I mean, when you're, especially like I grew up in the church, and so like I was so ignorant, so naive. Like I remember the first time I smelled weed, I was like,
yeah,
this smells like a skunk.
Yeah.
And now I smell a skunk and I smell weed, you know? It's like,
yeah.
But I, yeah, totally. Like if you play with older people and like, they're already strung out on coke or something, and
yeah,
nobody's fun on cocaine. I'm sorry. You're not.
No, I agree, man. I have to agree.
Yeah. I've just never hung out with somebody like that's just like strung out on coke. And I'm like, dude, you are an absolute pleasure to be with right now.
Yeah. We should go have dinner.
One thing I was going to add to the harmony part, and this is more of a musical thing, but this is one thing we actually did learn in church, and it's one of the reasons that church musicians get most of the gigs, and is because we listen. In a gig, I am constantly listening to what everybody else is doing, because I already know my parts. Like, I can play my parts in my sleep at this point. And so, like, if I'm playing in Western Union Man, which is our... It's a instrumental band that kind of has influence from like John Scofield, Grant Green, The Meters, kind of like a super funky jazzy thing. If I'm playing in that band, like I'm listening to like what the guitar player is doing on his solo. And maybe there's something where I can like, maybe he does a line like three or four times. And on the third time, I just kind of play it with him just for a second, you know, just to accentuate what he's doing.
Yeah.
And it's because I'm listening to what he's doing. And I've also practiced long enough, and I've developed my craft long enough that I can hear exactly what he's doing and I can play it. And
that's cool.
And so that is something that most people, I have found, even as some of my clients as a producer, a lot of people have never played with anybody else. And so you have these bedroom producers and bedroom musicians that literally do everything in their music. And so when they get in a real world scenario, when they're playing with their buddies, everybody's just stepping on everybody because nobody's used to listening to each other.
Yeah.
And that is, in my opinion, it's the most important thing in a gig. Like, obviously, besides knowing your music, like, as far as, like, a collective, listening to each other is the most important thing. Like, even if you play the same exact thing every night, if you're one of those fans that rehearses, like, your transitions, your segues, you rehearse your tops and your ends, and you rehearse every single part of it, you still have to listen to everybody else. Doesn't matter, because yeah, that's harmony. And that is also playing, that's playing unselfishly.
It's brilliant. And, you know, not to, again, jump on it, but it's 100% true. You know, you do see these bands with some incredible musicality in them, but often, you know, the drummer's shredding over the guitar solo, or the guitarist is playing a solo over the singer. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that stuff's important, you know? And again, not to bring it back to radio music, because radio music has changed so much, but if you do go back to radio music, that stuff has space and there are parts. And I'm not saying you have to stay exactly like the record, but you can learn from that. You just got to develop big ears, you know?
Right. And it even gets down to minuscule things like, is the drummer like just hammering the fuck out of his ride cymbal over the guitar solo? Maybe he's not like playing fills that are stepping on it, but maybe he's just playing so hard and so loud that there's no dynamic to the guitar player's solo at that point.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many things about music that we've lost, and dynamics is one of them.
Oh yeah, completely.
Everything has got to be as loud as fucking possible. Oh, I'm at minus 14 LUFS, or I'm at minus 6 dB. I'm as loud as I can possibly be. Why is Spotify louder than me? Ah! You know, I see that all producers and all these mixing engineers these days that use Fruity Loops and stuff like that. It's like, bro, like, first of all, you're using like an entry level program. Secondly, it doesn't matter. Like, make your shit dynamic. Make it minus 25 LUFS at the bridge, and then it jumps up to minus 14 LUFS. Whatever it is, I don't even know what I've been producing for 20 years. I have no fucking idea what a LUF is.
But, you know, the thing is as well, loudness doesn't mean better.
No.
And I think when it comes to live bands in particular, or even some of these guys in their souped up cars when they're driving past you and all you can hear are their windows vibrating, that doesn't mean it's better. And it's like, man, like, this is where I always thought a band like Foo Fighters were just really good. Mm. I mean, I think Foo Fighters are really good in general.
Sure.
But you can put one of their albums on, or you can even watch them live, and their use of dynamics is still so prominent. It's incredible. It's not just this, we're going to play everything as loud as we can from start to finish and your ears are going to bleed, but look how great we are. It's an art, you know?
I think that's the difference between the YouTube musician and the musician that has, you know, maybe from our generation, you know, that like didn't have the cell phone, didn't have the YouTube, didn't have Udemy, didn't have Fiverr. You know, we had Aunt Mildred, who taught us how to play Ode to Joy on the piano. And, you know, and we hated practicing because of that. But then we found the radio and we're like, oh, I could practice to the radio.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just... Oh, go ahead.
No, go for it.
I don't really know where I was going next, to be honest with you.
Okay. Well, I was going to just pull it back there for a second. You had spoken a little bit about, you know, your mental health and reading and things like that.
Mm.
And often I see you post like these kind of quotes from some of the books and stuff you're reading.
Mm-hmm.
What I like about that is you know, I'm a big advocate for all that stuff as well. And I think that... especially, you know, I'm sure with every vocation, but I think with being a self-employed musician, self-motivation is a big part. And if you can't self-motivate, you can potentially go into these bad places mind-wise and start to believe that maybe you're not where you should be or not achieving what you should be achieving, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So let's just for a second talk about sort of that part of it. What are some of your favorite kind of mindset sort of books?
Oh, man. We're getting into, like, fun stuff for me now. I've really enjoyed stuff from, like, Dr. Joe Dispenza.
Okay.
He has a book called Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself. And that one really hit me hard. Just there's a lot of really great stuff in there that spoke to me on a number of levels, and it's all basic stuff that like is so logical that I just never thought about. But like there's things in there like where he talks about what a personality actually is, and it's something that's like, actually, let me see if I can find it real quick. It's like the accumulation of influence throughout your life or something like that. Library. Let's see. Thankfully, I do a lot of reading on my phone.
Oh, this could take a minute. Anyway, that was a great book. He actually teaches you how to hypnotize yourself.
Wow.
And which is kind of how I got my start in my journey is I dated a hypnotherapist, and she kind of taught me about the subconscious mind and like how we do a lot of things to ourselves, including like make ourselves sick unconsciously.
Yeah.
And so I just, for the last like 5.5 years, man, I've been like diving into this and just learning as much as I can, because I just wasn't happy. I got off the road and I was extremely unhealthy. I was like 275 pounds, drinking heavily every night, smoking weed constantly, smoking a pack a day of cigarettes or more, eating McDonald's and just fast food every meal. I felt like shit. My blood pressure was like 170 over 110. My dad had just died. I was just in this like crazy, crazy downward spiral. And learning about all of that just really shifted. And it made so much more sense than what I grew up with, like with the religion side of things. And so I just, honestly, I started practicing. Like I would wake up every day, and whether it was a shitty day or a good day or a great day, I would just tell myself the things that I really wanted to be. I'm happy, I'm healthy, I'm successful, I'm wealthy, I'm patient, I'm loved, I'm worthy. And then I finish it up with, I'm right where I'm supposed to be and I'm grateful. And because that's one thing that really like helped cure my anxiety was just understanding that I'm right where I'm supposed to be at all times.
That's amazing, dude.
It's tough because like the girl that I dated, without getting too deep into it, we had a very deep relationship for how short it was. And like one day she just left.
And I'm sorry to hear that.
It is, you know what? I've got nothing bad to say about her. I'm extremely grateful for that relationship and that season of my life, as hard as it was afterward. But like, I still talk to her. I still recommend she's a therapist. So I recommend people go to her because I think she's really good at what she does. Definitely was not the right person for me, which is fine. But, I'm extremely grateful for everything I learned. And, but I found myself like literally in the fetal position on the floor in physical pain, in a puddle of tears, like a few times. And even through those times, I reminded myself that I was where I was supposed to be. And I didn't believe it at the time.
Yeah.
But I kept telling myself till I did believe myself. And eventually, after a month or two, I actually started to believe it. And I just kept that going. And like, that's what I've been doing is just, you know, by reading 4 or 5 days a week and getting on this exercise train and just doing things that are healthy to my body, like eating better foods, like pretty much cut out all pork except bacon. Just little things like that are slowly making my mind feel better and my body feel better. And I turned 40 in December, and I decided that by the time I'm 40, I want to be the most mentally, physically, and financially healthy I've ever been.
That's amazing. Good goal.
Yeah, man. And I'm close. Like I'm already down. I'm trying to lose like a total of 60 pounds. I'm already down like 23. I've made great money this year. I'm getting out of debt and like slowly paying my debt off. And mentally I'm the healthiest I've ever been. I'm the happiest I've ever been. I'm the most content, but not complacent. I'm expressing more gratitude than I've ever expressed. And these are all things that just make life better.
Yeah.
You know, music's great. Music's fun. Music's my job. And it's not everybody's jobs, but I understand that. So it means more to some people than others. But without the mental work, none of it matters.
Yeah, I agree. And it sounds like you're doing all that really maturely, you know? I think it's so easy to just play the victim card and go, oh, you know, this sucks because of this, that sucks because of that, it's everybody else's fault, it's never mine, and I see it every day, and it's some of the musicians I play with, I mean, they're wonderful people, but sometimes they could really do with, you should look at yourself a little bit, you know?
Man.
And you know, again, it's like we are met in life. I kind of just bite my tongue. I know my role. You know, I know who pays me. I know that with a lot of people that I work with, I'm just the side guy. So I just put a smile on and yes, sir, no, sir, you know, kind of thing. And I'm fine doing that because it's not my journey. You know, it's theirs. But some people, like you say, would be a lot happier if they just made tiny, tiny changes. Small changes. Enough small changes add up to a lot of big changes, you know?
Oh, man. And it's okay. One of the things that I did to make my life, and this made my life literally 8% better immediately, is I started making my bed every day.
Like a military kind of routine.
Yeah, but not even like military, like not even pressed and ironed, like just even just folding the comforter over so that when I get in bed later that night, I have to do something to get in bed.
Yeah.
And then I added like, I try to drink a lot of water as soon as I wake up. Like these little tiny things that just, as you keep adding little tiny things, it just, all of a sudden you're like, oh my God, like, look at this routine I've created. I feel great every morning now.
That's amazing, man.
Little things like I sleep 6 to 7 hours every night, and I sleep good every night. And I mean,
that in itself is a massive accomplishment for a musician.
Dude, and yeah, I've trained myself to do that though. Yeah. I've mentally taught myself how to sleep well, and it took time. And that's
so cool, man.
It's not to say that I don't have weird dreams occasionally or, you know, don't wake up to pee or something like that. But like, I wake up rested almost every single morning. And sometimes I wake up at like 7 or 8 in the morning too.
So just to go on that, and I'm going to get a little off topic here, but how important do you think that is? Because I'm a big believer that, you know, trying to stick to a routine in terms of what time you get up every morning is really important. And so now, again, you know, like you, I'm a working musician. So sometimes I find I get home really late, but without fail, I'm still up at the same time every day, you know? And sometimes I feel like a damn zombie because I didn't get much sleep. But I find that on the times that I've sort of swayed from that and gone, oh, well, I'll just wake up when I wake up kind of thing, I'm just not as productive.
Right. It's true. Yeah, it's totally true.
So, hey, Nick, so I don't want to take too much of your time, dude. So I'm going to ask you one more question. And it's a bit of a loaded one, but you can go as long or as short as you want. What do you think has been the best advice you've ever received?
Is this far as career or just in life?
Why don't we do both?
Okay. Well, in life, I'm just going to echo the right where you're supposed to be thing. That changed everything for me, and it helped me beat like the little bit of depression that I was in, and it's helped me maintain anxiety as I have hard days even still. Just, you know, sometimes money still gets tight because I'm a musician. So when in those times I can just be like, man, you're good. Just keep manifesting. You know, it's funny. I'll literally wake up in mornings like when I'm, instead of like getting sad or upset or just stressed that I'm low on money or that I'm single at 39 or whatever, like I just say a little prayer. Just like, man, everything's awesome. Like I start thinking about all I have, actually, honestly. I start thinking about everything that I actually do have and stop focusing on what I don't. And every time I do that, something happens. Last week, I was like, man, okay, I might have to pull from my savings a little bit for this month. Because we're about to go on like an 11-day tour, so we're taking, you know, like a week and a half off before we do that. So, all right, cool. So I need to manifest a little bit more money. And like, I woke up one morning and I was like, hey, you know, thank you so much for the job that I have and this awesome house and blah, blah, blah. And then I always finish it up with, you know, like, thank you for everything that's on its way. Thank you for the opportunities that are coming my way today. And literally within like 4 hours, I found out that we booked a private gig where everybody gets like really, really, really good money. And then I realized that I had another gig this weekend that I totally forgot about. And then the same night that I find out about the big gig, the owner of the venue we played at throws a bunch of money on stage, and we're each tipped like a bunch of extra money on top of our regular pay. So it's just like the gratitude side of things is everything, especially when you're trying to make it on your own, when you're self-employed, when you don't have that steady paycheck. It's when you start focusing on the lack is when things go awry. And that's another thing. That's something I learned from my books. You know, the self-growth books is, you know, the man that you can't compete in business, because when you're competing, what you're actually focusing on is your own lack. And so I'm just kind of
stuff.
It's crazy. And then, you know, CEOs are going to be like, oh, that's bullshit. Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
It's really not. I mean, granted, if you're playing a baseball team, that's a different thing. But like, if everybody has their place, everybody has their client base, everybody has their people, everybody has their product. And it's going to go to the people that need it, that want it. And that's just how it is. You can't change it. Yeah. So I'm a big believer in just like everything happens exactly as it's supposed to.
I agree.
And so, so that's what I'd say for life. As far as music, man, I don't know. I think it's just listen.
Listen, it's great advice.
Listen to everything.
Listen.
Yeah. Listen to all genres. Listen to each other. Listen to yourself. I think there's a lot of it in just like shutting up and listening.
Yeah. It's great advice, dude.
And then, one more piece of advice for you guys that are touring. Whenever you're setting up, like, check your instrument, make sure it's in tune, make sure your tone's good, you know, play 30 seconds of a song, and then just put your shit down. You don't need a noodle for 20 minutes while the sound guy's setting up. The sound guy needs his ears for that night. So yeah. When he's putting the mic in front of your cabinet and you hit that A chord or the E chord on your Les Paul, it fucking hurts.
Yeah.
So be mindful of that. If somebody else is checking their instrument for sound check, shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
The sound guy needs to hear that and to make you sound better.
it's a professional thing. You know?
Absolutely. Man, that's one of the most, when I see a band do that, I know they're pro. And the thing is, 98% of bands do not do that.
Yeah, you're right.
From the top level down, dude. I've played the top of the top where I'm playing in front of 70,000 people with a 50-piece orchestra, sharing a stage with the Rolling Stones and John Mayer. And I've played in front of 7 people at a bar in Iowa. And it doesn't matter where you are. That's professional.
I concur, man.
If you need to warm up, take your guitar off, unplug it, go to the green room. Go to your van. Yeah. Go to the side of the stage. Go sit in the crowd while they're getting set up, whatever, to warm up. You don't need to do it plugged in.
Yeah. Totally agree, man.
It's all about respect, dude. Respect, and listen. That's it.
Yeah. All right, Nick J, thank you so much for your time, dude. I appreciate you. Good luck with absolutely everything you're doing. Keep pushing. And where can our listeners get in touch with you if they would like to get in touch with you?
Instagram's good. I've got Century Recordings or Nick to the J, NickTotheJay. And then those are really the best ones, or you can email me at nick@centuryrecordings.com. And I'm down for advice. Or if you need songs mixed, you need stuff recorded for your record, I play a few instruments. So, and I'm set up to record.
Amazing. Well, dude, thank you so much for your time. I will talk to you soon.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Bye.
Later.
Sweet. I would like to thank Nick J for his time. I would like to thank each and every one of you for your time. And if you're getting stuff from this, please leave us a rating or review on your chosen streaming platform. You can find out more about the Musician's Mentor podcast or our website in general by heading to musicians-mentor.com. You can find out more about me by heading to travismark.com. I'm always down to talk music. And, you know, I know I've said this a couple times, but I'm not doing this for financial gain. Although I am starting to get a few people interested in advertising, I'll sort of see what I decide to do with that. But I truly hope you're learning stuff here. And if you're not, I just hope that maybe it helps you think about things to benefit your own life. That's the goal. That is the only goal. I'm really not looking for anything else out of this. Thanks for listening. Keep pushing. Good luck with everything you do. Mad love.